First of all, let's go to our Lord in prayer. Great loving Heavenly Father, how wonderful you are to us. You bless us and bless us and keep on blessing. Thankful for the gift of life, thankful for health, thankful for friends. Thankful, Father, that you love us and your Son died for us, and thankful for your word that reveals your will to us. Be with us as we study today. Bless those who can't be here because of sickness, and we pray that there are many that are looking in by means of Zoom and joining us in this class. Continue with us, guide us, protect us, take us home. We ask in Jesus' name. Amen. Last time we had just a little in chapter 3 that we needed to complete. Look in Proverbs 3, verses 27 and 29. Do not withhold good from those to whom it is due. When it is the power of your hand to do so, do not say to your neighbor, "Go and come back, and tomorrow I will give it," when you have it with you. And you know, that makes such good sense and such show of kindness and consideration. Back 67 years ago, I learned to appreciate this verse. I had a paper out full-time in college, preaching on Sunday, and then I went around each night to collect for my papers around the first of the month, and took about 2 weeks to get it in. But I went to this house, and I could tell there were people gathered inside, and the lady came to the door, and she said, "Come back tomorrow because I have friends here that I'm entertaining." Well, she didn't know that tomorrow I'd be getting up at 3 o'clock delivering 410 Montgomery Advertisers, catching a bus at 7 o'clock to go to Auburn, coming back at 5, and then going in, eating, and coming back tomorrow, riding 5 miles on my bicycle. And so I resolved then, it did me good, because I resolved then that by the Lord's help, I will never, never make someone wait for something that I owe. And if I see in advance that something has come up, I won't be able to. I'll get in touch with them and make arrangements ahead of time. But I will not allow one to have to come looking me up and telling me that, you know, it's time for that payment, or you owe it to me, or when are you going to pay me? And when one does that, you almost feel like you're begging for what is yours. And so I will never, never do that and cause others to do that. So come back tomorrow and I'll give it. Nix that. Get that out of your category and out of your thinking. Okay, let's look. Remember also that God is such a blessing of the underdog, and the poor, the needy, the outcast seem to be under His special care. There is a chapter in Deuteronomy that expresses this in many beautiful ways. And I'd like to read 3 passages from Deuteronomy, beginning in Deuteronomy chapter 24, verses 12 and 13. "And if the man is poor, you shall not keep his pledge overnight." You know, about everyone had a big, heavy robe that he had, some of them woven out of camel's hair. And this was not only his warmth in the daytime, but at night it was his cover. So he says, "The man is poor, you shall not keep the pledge overnight. You shall in any case return the pledge to him again when the sun goes down, that he may sleep in his own garment and bless you, and it shall be righteousness to you before the Lord your God." So consideration for the needs of others. Then look in Deuteronomy 24, 14 and 15. You shall not oppress a hired servant who is poor and needy, whether one of your brethren or one of the aliens who's in the land within your gates. Each day you shall give him his wages and not let the sun go down on it, for he is poor and has set his heart on it, lest he cry out against you to the Lord and it be a sin unto you. So here's the hired servant, and at the end of the day, well, he's expecting to get what's due to him. Don't hold it off. Don't say, well, I was busy and I couldn't pay him at that time, but do it. And then we have here God's help for our system to help for the poor, welfare system. And this is 17 through 22. You shall not pervert justice due to the stranger or the fatherless, nor take a widow's garment as a pledge. But you shall remember that you were a slave in Egypt, and the Lord your God redeemed you from there. Therefore I command you to do this thing. When you reap your harvest in the field and forget a sheaf in the field, you shall not go back to get it. It shall be for the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow, that the Lord your God may bless you and all the work of your hands. And then it says, when you beat your olive trees, you shall not go over the boughs again. It shall be for the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow. And when you gather the grapes of your vineyard, you shall not glean it afterward. It shall be for the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow. And you shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt. Therefore, I command you this thing. And you know the book of Ruth beautifully shows how that works. And here are these two widows, Ruth and then her mother, our mother-in-law, Naomi and Ruth. And when they come back from the land, all of them lost their husbands in the land of Moab. And Ruth didn't come back with her mother-in-law just to be a burden to her. But she is a time of the harvest, and it was gleaning time. And so she went out into a field just by hap, or providence, and began to glean in the field of Boaz. Well, Boaz was a wealthy man and kin to the family there. Not the nearest, but still kin, and had redeeming rights if his other nearest of kin would not take up the responsibility. But when Boaz came out and saw Ruth, he said, who's that woman? He said, oh, that's the Moabites that came back with Naomi. And he then went to his servants and said, look, let no one bother this woman. And then he said to her, now, when you need water, go to my buckets and get it. And then a little later, he had her sit down with his own workers and have a meal of corn, baked crushed corn, and then she had a lot of it and took the rest for home to her mother-in-law. And then Boaz said to his reaper, said, when she's behind you, just accidentally knock a sheaf off so she can get it. And said, even if she gets up among the reapers, well, don't criticize her. Well, when she came home with that bushel of wheat that she had beaten out, Naomi knew something was up. And she said, where did you glean today? He said, well, in the field of this man, Boaz. And Naomi, thanks be to God, he has remembered us. Ruth didn't understand it. He said, well, he is a near kinsman. And now you stay with him all during the harvest season. When the harvest was over, while Naomi wanted to be sure Ruth was taken care of. So now, when slip down and stay in hiding there at the threshing floor, and then when everybody's gone to their place to rest, well, then you see where Boaz lies down. And then you go and lie at his feet, which was a proposal, actually. Said, I'm willing to be your wife. Boaz woke up in the night and said, what's right? And then discovered it is Ruth. And he knew this. He knew the sign, and he said, well, God has blessed you that you haven't looked for a younger, handsomer man, but you've chosen me. And he said, it's true, I am a near of kin, but I'm not the nearest. And so she came back and told Naomi what had happened and said, well, you sit still. He won't rest until he's done something. Next day, he's there at the city gate where business was transacted, and he waited until he got some witness around, then waited for this other kinsman to come by and called him over. And here are the witnesses. He said, now you know the law that when a man dies, doesn't leave any children, well, then his nearest of kin shall take him and rear children up in his name. Well, he said, I'll redeem. He was thinking about property then, but now remember, you also take Ruth with it. He said, oh, no, I couldn't do that. Couldn't do that. He said, I don't know exactly what he meant when he said it, more of his inheritance. And he may have been thinking about that wife, wasn't with that pretty girl coming home with him. But in any case, then Boaz redeemed her. And they had a son, Obed, and he had a son, Jesse, and he had several sons, but the one we remember most is David. And so this Ruth became a very prominent member in the lineage of David and, of course, the lineage of Christ. Well, you notice a beautiful system there. You leave it, but they have to go out and pick it. And now, almost saying that someone who gets welfare has to work is almost like cursing. And I wonder the bill that they worked on last night to save the debt, defaulting owner debt. I wonder what they did about that point. That was in there, one of the sticking points. Okay, but let's move on from that. In verse 34, surely he scorns the scornful, but gives grace to the humble. 1 Peter 5:6-7, therefore humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due season, casting all of your care on him, for he cares for you. Okay, now let's go to chapter 4, and I'd like to get 4, 5, and 6, if possible. That may not be possible, but anyway, we'll go as far as we can. You know, it sort of surprises me as to how much Solomon talks about don't be a cosigner for your neighbor, or don't be a surety for your neighbor. And he said, now, if you have done this, he said, don't wait overnight. Go to him now. And then release yourself of this some way. Find some way to get out from under that promise. Here are the words in chapter 4, verse 3, beginning. When I was my father's son, tender and the only one in the sight of my mother, and actually he was not the only one, there were four of them, but when mothers have favorites, well, then he becomes the only one. Therefore, and then notice it says he, referring to his father, he also taught me and said to me, let your heart retain my words, keep my commands, and live. In Chronicles 3:4, tells us about the others. Okay, the idea of passing it on. You don't keep your teaching within yourself. Now, he says, my father taught me. And then here he is teaching those who read what he writes in Proverbs. You know, this has identified a lot of great people who did not keep their knowledge, but they passed it on to others and then passed on down the line to benefit many. God said of Abraham in Genesis 18, verse 19, "For I have known him in order that he may command his children and his household after him, that they keep the way of the Lord to do righteousness and justice, that the Lord may bring to Abraham what he has spoken to him." So he said, I know Abraham because he's going to teach those that are his responsibility. And then in 2 Timothy 2, 1 through 3, "And the things that you have heard from me among many witnesses, commit thou to faithful men who will be able to teach others also." Back a few years ago, I taught an extension class over in Phoenix City. And there's a gentleman there that was a painter and also a wonderful letterer. And I had him make me a plaque, or not more of a frameable piece on art paper that had the words of this passage in Psalms chapter 71. He said, "Now also, when I'm old and gray-headed, O God, do not forsake me until I declare your strength to the generation, your power to everyone who is to come." And I had that on my office at the building here in Montgomery then. Then when I went to Birmingham, and had it there at my office in Jefferson Christian. But then left it for my survivor there, or my one to follow me there. But anyway, even when you're old, and one of these days Cecil and I are going to become old, and we're going to still be teaching just as we do now, the Lord willing. And so old age is no time to quit. Old age is really the time to get generated up, get started, and get going. Okay, now, chapter 4, verses 14 and 15. "Do not enter the paths of the wicked, and do not walk in the way of evil. Avoid it. Do not travel on it." Don't get close to evil. You know, I heard that a school in South Carolina was hiring bus drivers, and they had a pretty mountainous route to get a driver for, and had some applicants came in, and one, he said, "How close could you get on to the edge of one of these without going over?" And one said, "Well, I could get within 4 feet." And a second one said, "I could get within 2 feet." The third said, "I would stay as far away from it as possible." He got hired. So you don't want to see how close you can get to these things and still survive. Or play the safe side. Stay away from it. Now, as you notice in Psalms chapter 1, "Blessed is the man, one, who walks not in the counsel of the ungodly." Here he is. First, he's walking in a group. Then notice next, "nor stands in the path of sinners." So he may be just a stranger here now that they're walking together, but they stop and get acquainted. And then look where he ends up. "Now, nor sits in the seat of the scoffer." So here he is walking, and then he's standing, conversing, and then he's sitting in their council. And this is the way that evil goes and that sin builds up. Okay, in Proverbs 14, verses 18 and 19, "But the path of the just is like the shining sun that shines even brighter unto the perfect day. The way of the wicked is like darkness. They do not know what makes them stumble." As you have been able to observe, my balance is not too good. But I tell you, turn the light out and I'm lost. If I don't have anything to hold to, I just fall on the floor there because of the darkness. I don't like the darkness of day or the darkness of sin. And so avoid that. Brother Gus Nichols, when he married, he and his wife were farmers. And they had a poor crop one year. In fact, a tornado came in and it destroyed a lot of their crop and did damage to the house and the barn. And he had always said, it'd take me 13 men to get me in a coal mine. You know, Walker County at that time was really producing the coal. And they paid good wages. But he said, I will not go in a coal mine. But he said after all of that happened, they had a big snow. And he saw his wife, they couldn't afford overshoes. And so he had a feed sack, or that she had a feed sack that was tied around her feet and then each foot, and then a nail stuck in to hold it together. And he said, I looked, and when I saw her going through that snow in the barn, I said, I'm going to work in the coal mine. Then he said, the mine where I work, we'd get an elevator, go down 500 feet till we got to the level where I was digging. And then he said, I'd get out and go down a hallway that had been dug out that had little 40-watt bulbs strung down the line, maybe about every 30 or 40 feet. But he was one level below that, so when he came to his level, he went down a trapdoor on a ladder into the darkness of that below. Well, of course, he had a carbide light, but it had begun to blink. And he had cleaned it many times in the dark. That didn't bother him. But as he went to his place, all along there'd be a right turn that would be a drainage or an air passage. And you go there and you just drop off. So you had to avoid those and then go and make a turn and a turn and on way. But anyway, when he got to his digging place, he took his lamp off, took it apart, and cleaned it, put new flint in it, and snipped off a little of the wick, and polished the reflector. And then he got ready to light it, and it had a little spin wheel against the flint that would give sparks that go into the fluid, the carbide, and light it up and then give a beautiful light. Well, he said, I flipped that little wheel and nothing happened. No sparks came out. And so I gave it a vigorous flip. Sparks came out, but it also came out, and that little wheel dropped to the floor. Here are thousands of pieces of little coal and rock all over the floor there. And he said he tried for some time to just feel around, but couldn't find anything different from anything else. And then he said, I've just got to go back to the main line. And as he went, they'd dig and then have a little higher in the center. You still couldn't stand all the way, just erect. But he was going down and holding to that. And then he came to a division. He tried to, in his memory, to see, now, which way do I go the safe way? And he'd choose that, and fortunately chose a safe way. And finally, he made the last turn, and he could see little streams of light coming down around that trapdoor. And he said, I never saw anything so beautiful in all my life as that little light from a 40-watt bulb coming around the edge of a trapdoor. And so, we love light. You know, those that love the darkness usually love the sin of the night. But the wicked have no light, but the wicked love the darkness. Okay, Proverbs 4:23, keep your heart with all diligence, for out of it spring the issues of life. Another passage, as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. And Jesus said, out of the heart come all of these evil things, not just eating a certain food. The heart has emotions. Our emotions are part of the spiritual heart. Matthew 22:37, Jesus said, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart soul and with all your mind. Then it also has volition or willpower. In Romans 6:17, but thanks be to God that though you were the slaves of sin, yet you obeyed from the heart that form of doctrine to which you were delivered. So obedience comes from the heart, from the volition of the heart. Then there's the intellect, 2 Corinthians 9:7 and 8. So let each of you give as he purposes in his heart. Purposing is an intellectual thing. And so these go to make up what we know as the spiritual heart. Okay, going on now to chapter 5. You young people don't know it, but when you get older, your hands are dry and you have to lick them in order to pick up a piece of paper. Okay, here we have beginning in the promises of the wicked woman versus what she delivers. Now, in her, you know, she has the smooth lips and the slimy talk and able to lure people. Now, here's what she promises. She promises, I'm going to give you a good time, and it'll be free, and there'll be no regrets. Well, Solomon says this is what she delivers. Death and hell, unstable ways. And he says you give her honor to others and your years to a cruel one. Aliens will be filled with your wealth. Your labors go to the house of a foreigner. And then look at verse 11. And you mourn at last when your flesh and your body are consumed. When I was 16 years old, Brother Moore, who became my father-in-law, Merle's father, was working on the county crew, and he was going home, walking off of the edge of the highway, and a friend, elderly man, came by to pick him up, and he pulled off and then got excited. He was right behind him and stepped on the gas instead of the brake, broke both of his legs, and he was in the hospital. And my brother-in-law-to-be, Earl, and I went over to see him, and there was another fellow over there. They whispered around that he didn't have long to live. And one day, as we came out from Brother Moore's room, he said, "Boys, come in here." He said, "Don't live the life I have lived." And then he pulled back his sheets, and his whole groin area was eaten up of VDD, venereal disease. And so Solomon says your flesh and your body are consumed. And there are not many that are promiscuous that don't have this problem. Okay, verse 3 of chapter 21 of 5, but the ways of a man are before the eyes of the Lord, and he ponders all his paths. Well, in Proverbs 15:3, the eyes of the Lord are in every place, keeping watch on the evil and the good. You remember that song, "There's an all-seeing eye watching you"? Somehow, when I was a boy, I got that as a bad thing. Here, God sees you. And you know, your parents said, "All right now, I won't be there, but God sees you," as if you better behave yourself or he'll zap you. Well, as I've gotten older, though, I appreciate that verse more. Because to know that I'm in the presence of the Lord and know that I have someone watching over me and someone who loves me and wants the best for me, by then to have that all-seeing eye is more wonderful. The eyes of the Lord are in every place, keeping watch over the good and the evil. There's an old story I heard a long time ago that a man wanted to steal some of his neighbor's corn. And so he got his boy, and they went over in the dark and came to the crib. And the dad said, "Now, you look that way, and I look this way. And the little boy said, who's going to look up, Dad? And always, always we need to think there is one that is up. And whether we need it as a warning or we need it as comfort. That we call on the Lord because he's there. Okay, now in chapter 6. And actually, I was ahead of myself a while ago. Look at verses 6, 1 through 3. My son, if you become surety for your friend, become guaranteeing something for him, just like co-signing a note. If you have shaken hands in pledge for a stranger, said, okay, I'll do that. You're snared by the words of your mouth. You're taken by the words of your mouth. So do this, my son, and deliver yourself. For you have come into the hand of your friend. Go and humble yourself and plead with your friend. You know, when Merle and I married, but we were 17, and in planning ahead at least a year, I had a paper route, and I would collect often on Friday night, and that was our date night, the only night we could have a date, Friday night. And so I'd collect, and I came in, and I said, look, you get a cigar box from someplace, and all the change that I get in my collecting, I'll put in that cigar box. Well, that went on week after week, month after month. And one time she gave it back to me, said, I can't wait on this. And anyway, we had a spout, but lasted 2 days. But I kept putting money in that cigar box. And then she accepted, and we were planning to get married, and I wanted to buy a little house trailer that we lived in 2.5 years. It was 26 feet from the end of the coupling to the taillight, back of the taillight. 8 feet wide, and my, they talk about these 72-foot pullouts and all of that. My, that's like building a house. But that was the neatest little old place. However, the seller wanted $900 for it. I counted all of my money that we had together in that cigar box, $300, $600 needed. So I went down to the Union Bank to borrow $600. And so the fellow's taking my application and said, how old are you, son? I said, 17. He said, whoa. He said, I can't lend you anything unless you have a co-signer. Said, you're not old enough, legally old enough, to sign a note in your own name and be held liable for it. So Truman Boyd was my closest friend at that time, and his daughter is a member here. And I went to Truman, told him my problem. He said, well, I'll sign for you. He is older than I was. And so he co-signed the note, paid it off all, no problem there. But I somehow got it in my mind that since he had done that for me, I ought to co-sign. And so here I began to co-sign notes. And it wasn't until I had two to pay that I began to rethink that matter. And I said, well, no, there's got to be another way than this. And then years go by, and we have a housekeeper by the name of Neva that comes to our house once a week to clean. And Neva came to me one time and said, I need $100. Could you let me have it? And I said, sure, no interest. Just when you're going to pay me back? And she said, just as soon as I get paid. Well, now she had a good job. She was a head housekeeper at the Marriott Hotel there. And so when she got paid, I don't know when it was, but it wasn't soon. But anyway, finally she paid me back. Well, this began to go back and forth, and they've got 200 and 400 and so forth. And then about 7 o'clock one night, she called crying, and he said, could you help me? said, they're going to take away my house. Now, Willie Miller, my wife, had helped her to get this house because there at a time the government had a special program to have to try to get more of the poor people in housing. And so here Neva treasured that house because not many had those of her economic status. But I said, why are they going to take your house? And she said, I owe back income tax I haven't paid. And I said, how much? And she said, $4,000. I said, Neva, where are you now? She said, in your driveway. And so I had her come in, and I said, okay, tell me how you're going to pay this back. And she gave me her payback plan, so beautiful. And I wrote her a check for $4,000, and she saved her house. But I think it took me 5 years. And sometimes I give her, said, okay, give me 100, and then I'll count that as 200. And finally we got on down, and I was giving her 3 for 1. Every time you give me 100, I'll count 300 off of that. So I, when that was over, I said, now, Neva, let's understand something. Said, if you need something, and you tell me, and I believe that it's a legitimate need, if I have the money, I'll give it to you. I won't lend it to you. I'm out of the lending business. And I said, my banker and I have an agreement. He's not going to preach, and I'm not going to lend money. And so that's the deal. And so that's the way it stands to this day. But I've had some times that it seemed hard to turn away, but I knew, number one, it wasn't a very good buy that they wanted to buy or something. Okay, so Solomon says, be careful about that. And let me see, also I'd add to that, signing a letter of credit down at the bank. You know, literally all the money that I've ever lost has been invested with friends. But my friend wanted me to invest in a company of his. Said, all you have to do is give $10,000 down and sign a credit of a letter of credit at the bank for $22,000. And he said, but that'll never be. That was if we had to draw so far. That never happened. Well, time went on. Got a call from a banker, and he said, Mr. Brandon, you need to come down and pay that $22,000 letter of credit. That was hard to pay. But again, taught me a lesson about, I never had any experience with letters of credit. But they're even tougher than cosigning. Well, we have to watch our money. We want to be generous and kind and help people. But there comes a time that we have to be very, very thoughtful about it. You know, I've known two families. Men worked at the same company, made the same amount of money. One rented a tumble-down shack. The other owned or was buying a nice house. One had an old jalopy. The other had a nice newer make car all the time. And they made the same amount. And of course, the difference was management. Half of your having something is earning something. If you don't earn anything, you don't have anything to keep or save. But the other half is learning how to manage it. You've heard that expression that a housewife can throw more out the back door with a tablespoon than the husband can shovel in the front door. Well, had a friend in Tallahassee, Dale, J.D. Hooker, and he had a grocery store and sold on credit. And he told me one day, he said, come on, go with me. I want to show you something. So he delivered a batch of groceries over to this house. And he said, look around the yard. And there were fried eggs around like silver dollars. And the old dog had eaten so many of his stuff on him, he wouldn't even bother him. But he said, there's a man and his wife, and they have a son. And every morning, she fries a dozen eggs. And they may eat three, four, or five other out in the yard. And just throwing silver dollars out the door. And he said, now, they owe me just under $1,000 now. And they never would have paid except she was involved in an accident. It wasn't her fault. And they sued and got a settlement, and they paid off their grocery bill. But we have to be careful. Just one more story along this line. Every year when I was president of Jefferson Christian, I taught the senior Bible class and always spent 1 week on finances. But anyway, this story's with Brother Black, V.P. Black. When he and Loreen married, his first preaching place was down at West Palm Beach, Florida. And he said there was a doctor there that had retired from his practice. And every Monday morning, they would meet and have breakfast together, or a cup of coffee, and talk. And VP said that man was the most valuable man in finances to me that I could imagine. When he got in and said, well, Brother Black, did they pay you this last week? I said, yes, sir. And said, did you pay all your bills? I said, yes, sir. I said, well, how much you have left over? I said, well, nothing. He said, well, you really didn't earn anything last week, did you? I said, oh, yes, they paid me that, but you spent it all. And then he drove into Brother Black's mind and said, look, if you're ever going to get ahead, you've got to spend less than you earn. And if you can do that, well, you need to save at least 10% for the Lord. And if you can live on 90%, you can tighten the belt a little more and live on 80%. So give the Lord 10, put 10 into a good savings account. Well, of course, later that 10 went way up, but he made a practice of doing that. BP never earned a lot of money. When he went into full-time meeting work, he'd hold 45 meetings a year, but he couldn't live off of what they paid him on the meetings. In fact, they had an agreement. The Plateau elder said, look, you go into the mission field and we'll pay you your regular salary and you take out your expenses for what they pay you and give the rest to the church. He did it the last 25 years of his life. But with that saving program, when he died, he left Lorraine a house that was paid for. They had savings, and they had enough for her to take care of herself the rest of her life. But you've got to determine, and you can't have every toy that comes along, a motorcycle, boat, so forth. But it takes that close management. Did I hear a bell? Well, more stories later. But I love teaching Proverbs because there are a lot of things you can stop and apply your learning to. Good to have you here today. Next time, let's try to get 7, 8, and 9. And if we do that, then we'll be out of his teaching to his children and get this more general area beginning in chapter 10. Have a good day. God bless you.